You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Commentary Trek Stars. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today we are going to continue our look at the career of Gene Roddenberry as a television series creator with the Questar tapes.
The Questar tapes.
I thought it was Questar.
That's what I said.
That's what I thought. But in the movie, they keep on pronouncing it Questar.
Well, they're Americans.
Okay.
They don't know how to talk.
All right. This is another failed pilot.
Another one.
Yes. This one aired in 1974, 1 year after Genesis 2.
I think that we could actually accurately say that all of Gene Roddenberry's pilots technically failed.
Well, not where no man has gone before.
Does it count as a pilot?
Yeah.
It's kind of a rejuvenation, rejiggering.
It's still a pilot.
You think technically it still counts as a pilot?
Yeah, and what about Encounter at Farpoint? I'm talking about in terms of getting your series on the air.
Okay.
All right.
That's fine.
The Questar Tapes was written by Gene Roddenberry and Gene Kuhn.
Yes.
And it starred Robert Foxworth and Mike Farrell and was directed by Richard A. Kalla.
Yes.
So as a fan of the Questar Tapes, because it's safe to say that you are a fan of the Questar Tapes, correct?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Can you give us a basic breakdown of the premise of this particular movie? Spoiler-free, if possible.
No.
Okay.
That's not possible.
All right.
It's actually not possible to describe what is good about this idea without revealing at least a few spoilers. And here's the thing, there's like maybe two.
Okay. If you want to watch this before listening to us talk about it, you can actually find it on YouTube.
Okay, so I'm gonna give the synopsis now.
Okay.
You know the episode of Simon Earth?
Mm-hmm.
What if he was an android? That's mm-hmm. the show.
Okay. But there's a little bit more to it than that, you know.
Well, it's sort of, you know, yeah, they sort of move some elements around, but most of those elements are in the past.
Well, okay, here's the thing. Like, if it had gone to series, that's what the series would be.
Yes.
The movie as it stands is setting up that series, and as such, it's a different type of story.
Sure. The thing about a lot of these pilots, and a lot of TV, especially before, the most recent Golden Age, which probably started at the end of the 90s, is that pilots were very often radically different than what the show was supposed to be. And this is one of the examples of a pilot that is so bizarrely different than the intended series that one wonders what the thought process was behind doing such a thing. But
Well, how about
it's essentially, you know, the movie is the story of you know, a bunch of scientists trying to put together an android that another dude was working on.
Mm-hmm.
And they got all these tapes, because that's how you store digital information in the distant past. Like, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so some of these tapes were damaged. So they are not able to program the android with all of his necessary programming, which is why he doesn't understand emotions or humor. And why he has white skin and wears a strangely colored... That's Data. That's Data. It's difficult to keep those separate.
Yeah.
Because they're the same one.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I mean, you know, there's even, like, lines of dialogue in this, which were later used for Data.
Yeah. And you know what the best thing about this is? The best thing about the parallel between Data and Questar is that there is now, theoretically, somebody working on a new Questar tapes. And Ron Roddenberry was like, I know who should play that guy, Brent Spiner. He would knock that out of the park.
Really?
I am not making that up.
Okay.
That's a thing that happened.
I hadn't heard about that. Okay, well, that's interesting.
But yeah, the at the end of the day, it's a show about an android working on Earth in secret to avert essentially humanity screwing up the world so much that they are wiped out. And this is and Questor is, and this is the thing that you have to know in order to be interested in watching the show, is the most recent in a very long line of androids that goes back several thousand years.
Mm-hmm.
These androids have been working on Earth to keep humanity from wiping itself out for a very long time, long before people made clothes. Which begs the question, what the androids at the very end of the hallway of dead androids are wearing. I'm very curious about that, because the one right before the last slab, which is there for Questor, because there's a giant corridor full of dead androids, the one right before him, he's wearing a suit, because he's the guy that made, you know, the tapes, and he's going to imprint those on Questor. And the guy right before him, wearing a suit! Two of them right there, wearing suits. How long has this guy been there? When did the last guy die? When did the guy before that guy die?
Yeah.
Was it 150 years ago? He wouldn't be wearing that suit. Does the current android go around to all the dead androids and change their clothes to make sure that they're timely? So that when somebody goes in there and finds a bunch of dead androids, they don't get all freaked out by the strange clothes? I have problems with the clothes.
Okay.
I mean, if you're putting a dead android on a slab to sit there until the end of time, well, take the clothes off. He's an android. He's not shy.
So what are your thoughts on the show on the whole? First off, on the movie itself, and then we'll get into the potential series after that.
The movie's not great.
Okay.
It's dramatically sort of weak. It has the dramatic structure of a strangely motivated road movie.
Yeah, I got that same impression.
Yeah, it's like, what if Thelma and Louise were on the run from some people who didn't really wish them harm?
And Thelma was an android.
Yeah, but not really for any reason.
Mm-hmm.
The movie has so many things to lay out in order to explain to the audience what the show is, but those things are not part of the show. I mean, the logical thing to do, the most reasonable thing, is the thing that, you know, has worked on TV a whole bunch of times. You just skip over it. You just don't do it. You don't do the origin story. Origin stories are boring. The best way of dealing with, you know, a complicated history is to just say, it's a complicated history. I'll tell you about it when it's relevant.
Yeah. So what do you think about how the series would have been if it had gotten picked up?
Well, I mean, based on, you know, Gene Roddenberry's history, he had these weird sort of approaches to his shows. You know, there's an odd aspect of Star Trek that I've tried to talk about in the past, but people seem to be sort of, you know, fuzzy on what the dialogue is. But there are aspects of Gene Roddenberry's, you know, like dramatic interest that indicate that he was using these characters, these sort of like, you know, these archetypes and, you know, moving pieces around the board to talk about, like, an idea about people or an idea about society. And sometimes he's moving around these characters and these pieces in order to talk about why these pieces are good elements to be used in other stories to talk about society. And there is sort of a schism there. There's definitely a distinction between one type of story and another type of story. And Star Trek has done that for a very long time. Sometimes they're talking about now, and sometimes they're talking about how these characters are a good tool for talking about now.
Mm-hmm.
And Questor tapes, I assume, would have taken on some sort of structure like that. So obviously there would be some episodes where Questor would say, that course of action that you're going to do is crazy. You shouldn't do that. I'm going to explain why that's a crazy idea. And then Questor proceeds to say something that, you know, any smart person of the era knows. Hey, nuclear proliferation is ridiculous. You're not getting anything out of this. You should stop. And then they say no, and then he says, oh, well, then I'm going to take your mom apart anyway. Because that's my thing. I do that. I'm a robot terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been, you know, part of the show. But on the other side, there would also have been the stories about sort of the inevitable consequences of a character like that being in the world.
Yeah.
And, obviously, they would... I mean, the show's degeneration... I mean, I could telegraph it here. I mean, eventually, the network would say, you got to have a scientist guy trying to track him down and take him apart for weapons research. Oh, no! That scientist is on our trail again. We've got to change cars. And suddenly you're watching a terrible show about an android who's a fugitive looking for a one-armed scientist who wants to take him apart. And that wouldn't be any good, but it would happen. Season 3, it would happen. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, like, my thoughts on the show, well, basically are pretty much the same as yours. Like, when I was watching it, I was not enthralled. I thought it was actually kind of boring.
Oh, it's dramatically, ridiculously. I mean, it's like bottom heavy.
Yeah.
It's like so, it's very strange. Usually you see the exposition at the beginning of a thing and you go, oh, I just got to get through this.
Right.
But this one, it does the opposite, which might be worse. Where it's like, hey, nothing's happening here of any relevance. Eventually we'll get around to making this important.
I found it to be much more intriguing than I did entertaining. You know, like I kept on thinking, like, where is this going?
Mm-hmm.
When is it going to get there? I hope it gets there soon. Oh, it's there! Wow, that's interesting. I can't wait for the next episode. Oh,
yeah, it's frustrating and sad. And oh my god, can I talk about the last few moments of the episode?
Sure.
I mean, pilot.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thing. I mean. This actually happens in this. I'm just going to explain this. At the very end, everything has been resolved. The guys who were hunting him think he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
The plan for him to guide humanity into its next age, the last age in which it needs essentially a kind of super intelligent alien chaperone,
mm-hmm.
Is now dawning, and Questor is going to lead humanity into this new era, which they have no chaperone anymore. That's all established. And then, when they're escaping from the guys, in the last shot, in the very last shot, there is voiceover of the two guys way in the distance, where one of them says, I could use some help in my ongoing adventures to come up soon. And the other guy says, that would be fun. And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
In voiceover, the guy who has been there along for the ride decides, yes, I'll be your sidekick.
Yeah.
For several years to come. Probably Saturdays at 7. You know, and like that actually happens in it. And man, it's lame.
Yeah.
Just cut that out.
Well,
the show doesn't go, if you don't get the show, cut that line out. It's terrible.
Well, you know, Roddenberry, always the optimist. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, unlike Genesis 2, which I think, like if you were to just say, like, these are two movies, which is better?
Yeah.
I might actually say Genesis 2 is better. But if you were to say, these are two shows, pick one to watch, I'd watch Questor Tapes.
Yeah, I mean, there are things in there where you think, I want to see what these people do.
Mm-hmm.
This is cool. I mean, like, one of the things that I really responded to was, like, the idea of this guy, essentially, you know, like not really a person, an android with some sort of sentience. He's sort of, like, assembling himself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sequence where he essentially puts himself together. He, like, assembles a face and a body, and you see him doing a lot of it.
Yeah.
And there are sort of, like, aspects of that are really fascinating. The idea that this guy, you know, in a sense, chose his identity without an emotional preference.
Mm-hmm.
And like, inevitably, I mean, I would really love to see an episode of this show where somebody says, why did you choose to be a white guy? And he says, well, I can explain that, but it's kind of dark.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, I wanted to see that show. When I heard about Questor Tapes, I was like, oh, that sounds like Data. Also, Gary 7. It sounds like Gary Data.
Yeah.
And then I watched it, and I was like, this is cooler than I expected. Because other shows that managed to make it to air, I'm always astonished at what was on decades ago versus the things that didn't get made.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the stuff that was on back in those days, makes you think, man, how did they not give Roddenberry a shot with this ridiculous idea?
Well, apparently this is, out of all of Roddenberry's failed pilots, this is the one that came closest to actually becoming a series. Yeah. And I guess the deal breaker was essentially the studio asked for too many changes that Roddenberry wasn't comfortable with.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, we've talked about the Data connections. I mean, like, for those who haven't seen it, we can't overstate the similarities between Questor and Data. Like, there are lines of dialogue.
The actual, yeah.
Which are taken. I mean, yeah. there's a scene where, like, they're going to try to get the sidekick to seduce a woman, and the woman who's trying to be, who's going to be seduced.
The target?
The target. Mm-hmm. Figures out their plan and starts discussing this with the android, who she knows is an android.
Yes.
And she's like, so what was your plan? He's like, oh, well, you know, I was going to have him get it on with you and then, you know, hopefully get some information from you or what have you. And she's like, well, what if I were to want to get it on with you? And he's like, well, I am fully functional.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, they used that that phrase.
There's also the, I mean, just sort of the idea of him, like, looking for his dad, essentially, mm-hmm. you know, which is very similar to stuff that was
called
going
on. Called Noonien Soong. Mm-hmm. I mean, just Dr. Noonien Soong.
Yeah, right. And the idea that he wants to be human. There's a line of dialogue in here where they're like, you can do this, you can do that. And he's like, yes, but I would give it all up just to be able to understand a joke or, you know, laugh at a joke or, you know, whatever.
Yes.
Stuff like that. I mean, like...
Well, you know that line of dialogue in Encounter at Farpoint when you're showing it to somebody for the first time and you get to that scene yeah. where Riker and Data are in the holodeck and then you go, hey, do you want to order a pizza? I would give it all up to be human. That's an awfully wistful thing to say, a person without emotions.
Yep. So that's in there. And there's even a scene from The Royale, which was in The Royale.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about The Royale.
He,
thanks for bringing that up again.
Where he squeezes the dice, you know, in order to get them to roll in his favor. I mean,
yeah.
It's like taken like shot for shot from Questor tapes. And then, of course, there's the Assignment Earth connection as well. I mean, obviously, you know, Roddenberry, there seems to be a thing going on in his career where if he can't get an idea off the ground, he puts it in his back pocket and uses it, you know,
on Star
later
Trek.
On down the road.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, in this case, it didn't work on Star Trek.
Either. Well, I mean, it didn't work on Star Trek, and then he tried it again on Star Trek.
Well, whatever, but I mean, he tried it on Questor tapes. So that's kind of interesting from that perspective.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the quality of the show or the
show hypothetical
in general?
Show?
Yeah, or anything.
I'm not even kidding. I would love it if they made the show. I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, the story of it possibly being made like now. I think it'd be awesome. I mean, I would actually love to see, you know, a show. You know, Tim Minear's involvement, that would be fantastic.
Okay. Well, I mean, we can talk about that now. I was going to bring it up later on, but. You know, this is actually back almost 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
There was an announcement made that Roddenberry...
It was 2010, right? It was 2010?
Yeah, January of 2010.
Oh, it was January. Wow.
Roddenberry's estate or whoever, you know, Rod Roddenberry, the company, the Roddenberry Company, whatever they're called these days. Roddenberry.
Roddenberry's?
Roddenberry Films. Yeah.
Fresh Roddenberry's?
Yeah. They sold the rights to Imagine Entertainment, who, you know, Ron Howard and Brian Grazer's production company, who do lots and lots and lots of things, 24, other stuff. And they hired Tim Minear
yeah.
to develop the show.
Now, just because this was almost 3 years ago doesn't mean that it's not happening, because this happens all the time on
sure,
TV.
Sure,
shows do sort of sit around.
The fact that we haven't heard about it since then, though... Tim Minear, for those who don't know, is the guy who makes all the shows you loved that are canceled after three episodes. He was the sort of co-showrunner on Firefly. What else did he do? Yeah, he worked on Dollhouse? He worked on Dollhouse?
Yeah. And he, well, I mean, he sort of orbited around, you know, the
Joss Whedon, yeah.
Well, I mean, the expanded Whedonverse, which involves Angel, some other people.
Angel.
Yeah, yeah. His level of involvement in the things is sort of varies.
He did that show Drive with Nathan Fillion, right? That lasted like 3 episodes.
Oh, I think that one made it to like 5 episodes. Oh,
okay. And then he did the show. I actually saw this show. What was it called? The one with the FBI profiler played by Rachel Nichols? The Inside. The Inside.
I have no idea what
with,
that is.
Yeah, Rachel Nichols and Peter Coyote. Rachel Nichols, she's actually in the new Star Trek movie. She plays the green girl, the Orion non-slave girl who Kirk gets it on with.
The Orion emancipated girl?
Yeah, yeah. And it was really good. It only lasted 6 episodes, I think. Yeah, and now Tim Minear, and this is another reason why I'm thinking that, you know, Questor Tapes is dead, well, is because he's been working on American Horror Story. Yeah, so I don't think that I would love to see this, especially with Tim Minear at the helm.
Well, I mean,
don't
the thing think it's is, gonna happen. The thing is when it comes to TV properties, these things do sort of bounce around for a while until it finally, you know, just sort of locks in. I mean, they're kind of just grooves. You know, basically it's a ball rolling around in that sort of weird development nightmare world where things roll and then eventually get stuck somewhere, and usually they get stuck and tossed out, but sometimes they get stuck and end up getting produced.
Just a little background about this here and the people involved. The star, the Questor, if you will, is Robert Foxworth, who is best known for his role on Falcon Crest. I haven't watched that show. Had to edit a scene of it.
Falcon Quest? For editing. It's a show where they look around for a bird.
A falcon.
They quest for a bird.
Falcon Crest.
I've never seen that show.
Oh.
Never heard of that.
Star Trek fans might know him for his 2 roles in the series. In Deep Space Nine, he played Admiral Layton in Homefront and Paradise Lost. Those are the ones where the shapeshifters come to Earth and everyone freaks out. And then he also played Vlas on 3 episodes of Enterprise, which I believe was the Vulcan arc from season 4 with T'Pau, I believe. I'm not positive on that. I'm sure someone can clear that up for us. As far as other genre things people might know him from, he was on a few episodes of Babylon 5, Sequest, DSV, and in the Transformers movies, he's the voice of Ratchet. So his sidekick was played by Mike Farrell, who's a bigger star for sure. He played Captain B.J. Honeycutt in MASH, which he was nominated for some Emmys for that. He was also the voice of Jonathan Kent on the Superman animated series. The pilot was directed by Richard A. Kalla.
Who did...
he did...
War of the Worlds?
No. The Battlestar Galactica pilot. Not our Battlestar Galactica. Their Battlestar Galactica. The pilot from the 1970s Battlestar Galactica. That's not a good thing.
Here's the thing about that. If you got to be saddled with a credit from the original Battlestar Galactica, you could do significantly worse than the pilot.
I guess so.
And you could do that by having any other credit.
Yeah.
Because that episode is actually significantly better than the rest of the show. And the fact is, you know, if you took out that crazy, like, those little tiny crazy stupid bits that are essentially, like, you know, artifacts of the 70s, it would almost hold up. It would work.
They still go to the casino planet in the pilot after the world blows up. He also directed an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. He directed The Last Outpost, and that's the first episode with the Ferengi. And now, can you refresh my memory as to the history behind how they messed up Gene Roddenberry's concept for the Ferengi in The Last Outpost?
Well, there isn't a lot of specificity on how it was messed up.
But it's in, what do they say? In the, what is Larry Nemechek? Listener, Larry Nemechek, which just still blows my freaking mind. What does he say?
I'm going to bring it up because it's not super specific, because I think he didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, maybe we can
change I will pull it out. All right. But it is a little bit vague.
All right. All right.
It's along the lines of, oh, this wasn't what was intended.
Okay. It must have been from somewhere else then. But.
Well, I think that it's probably responsible and reasonable to not say, the important thing to recognize about this show is that this person, here's a picture of him, ruined it. This is where he lives, and this is a list of his allergies.
Okay, yeah, but from what...
I'm aware that Star Trek has some ardent fans who are willing to murder for its quality.
Okay, but from what I remember reading somewhere...
It's totally possible.
Is that... Gene Roddenberry was sick and out of the office that week, and he had set up the Ferengi to be the big baddie on Next Generation.
It is true that the Ferengi were positioned to be the big baddies because, as a person who was watching the show, I was well aware of every intended thing.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is the one where the Ferengi show up. And they're like, yeah, these are going to be the new bad guys. And I was like,
and the portrayal of the Ferengi was such that it caused them to alter their plans for the Ferengi drastically. So in essence, Richard A. Kalla, the guy who helped Gene Roddenberry get Questor tapes off the ground, is also responsible for ruining a major component of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
That's karma.
All right.
He raised one thing out of the ground, put another thing deep in it.
Okay. Now, the episode was written, of course, by Gene Roddenberry, but it was co-written by Gene L. Kuhn, the other Gene, the guy who, in my mind, is...
Oh.
What?
No, go ahead.
In my mind, is almost as much responsible for the success of Star Trek, the original series, as Gene Roddenberry himself.
Cleverly worded.
Like, if you look at the episodes that he's written and everything like that, I really get the impression that he was basically the Michael Piller of the original series. He was the guy, you know, I mean, Gene Roddenberry was the creator, but Gene Kuhn was the guy who was, like, keeping the ship afloat on a daily basis. You know what I mean?
Yes,
boots were on the ground.
He was the Riker of that operation.
Right.
And then later on, he was like, hey, that should be a character.
He's written a bunch of episodes of the original series, most notably to me anyway, Arena.
What's wrong with you?
I love Arena.
I love people walking on rocks.
Yeah. He produced the show for, I think, like the first year and a half or something like that, somewhere in that area. And then I didn't realize this, but he actually wrote a number of episodes in Season 3 under a pseudonym, Lee Corwin. He wrote Spock's Brain.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I assumed that when you said he was almost as responsible for Star Trek's success, I thought you were saying... He's almost as responsible for Star Trek's success, in quotation marks. Because when you write Spock's Brain, and that's a dude in a book depository with a rifle trying to kill a show.
Hmm. Other Trek alumni on the show included Walter Koenig, apparently, somewhere in there. I didn't see him. Did you see him?
I don't know, but this has the tone of a playground rumor.
It's on the IMDb. He's
Which
got
is
a credit.
Kind everything. Of the modern.
I think he's in it. I'm pretty sure he's in it. And then, get this, Majel Barrett.
Really? Majel Barrett's in it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that. Like, you know what? Here's the thing. Every time I see Majel Barrett in one of the things that Roddenberry was involved in, I think, whoa, she's only playing one character here. That shows restraint.
Yeah.
He pulled back. That's smart. You got to do that. You know, I'm impressed that Majel Barrett is actually a pretty good actress. She did a lot of good stuff.
Oh, yeah, she's not bad at all. It's kind of weird that she isn't in stuff outside of this. One thing that she is in, A Guide for the Married Man, along with Captain Pike. Check out that movie if you haven't seen it.
I've seen it.
It's really good. Directed by Gene Kelly. Very funny.
I've seen
Very
it.
Very funny. Walter Matthau. Check it out. So, any final thoughts on the Questor tapes?
I hope they're not final. I do hope that they get around to making a show based on the concept. But the fact is that the ideas aren't so fundamentally inextricably bound up with the names and properties that you couldn't do something equally interesting that wasn't necessarily Questor tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering that the show, as you know, conceptualized, was kind of devoid of specifics. You could easily do a second episode that established a whole bunch of specific things and forget the original one.
Okay, now before we head out, we should talk about one more Roddenberry pilot, which didn't get off the ground, which we can't really cover in depth because we can't find it anywhere. Basically,
yeah, it's more or less lost.
Okay,
sequestered.
Okay, it is a
sequestor taped.
It is a pilot which was called Spectre.
It was the RE, not the ER, because the ER is a different show.
It was co-written by Roddenberry and Samuel A. Peeples, who worked on Star Trek, and it was directed by Clive Donner, and it starred Robert Culp. So this was a movie which aired in 1977. It's about renowned criminologist and occult investigator William Sebastian, who recruits his old friend Dr. Hamilton to aid him in his current case. Anitra Scion.
Not Cylon, just Scion. And that's not Scion with the S-C. It's Scion as in Cylon, but without an S. Like, you forgot to hit the L.
Yeah.
Why did I say S? It's a C-Y-O-N.
The sister of prominent British businessman Geoffrey Scion believes her brother is dabbling in the black arts. In turn, Geoffrey claims that she is mentally unfit. Sebastian and Hamilton travel to the Scion estate to investigate the matter. Complicating the issue is Sebastian's debilitating heart condition that was induced by his own experimentations with the black arts.
Yes.
So you said that you've seen this show at some point in the past?
No, I've said that I am somewhat aware of it. I've seen something of it.
Okay, but not the whole thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess, and it's really, really weird because it's the only time Roddenberry seems to have been open to the idea of, like, magic in stories.
Yeah.
Which I relate to because I tend to think that magic is kind of a cheat in stories, but I don't say, hey, magic should never be in stories. I always say, is there magic in it? I bet it's done stupid. Because that's pretty much a safe bet. And I'm not saying that it never works. I'm just saying that if you're betting on stupid, you will get rich in Vegas when you're betting on shows with magic.
Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts on Questor tapes?
You know what would make it worse?
What's that?
Magic.
Okay. Well, I'll leave you with a quote from Rod Roddenberry, which he stated when the Questor tapes was being developed for the new series back in 2010. He said, "My father always felt that Questor is the one that got away. He believed that the show had the potential to be bigger than Star Trek."
He's wrong.
Well, that's it for this week. We will be back next week with the next part of our Gene Roddenberry series, where we look at Earth, the Final Conflict. As always, you can find us at...
Do you have like a dump-dump-dump sound effect that you can put in?
No.
What about like that wah-wah sound that's at the end
of... I don't have that either. Yeah.
All right. I don't know what to do about that then.
As always, you can check out our other show, Commentary Trackstars, at commentarytrackstars.com. You can email us at comtrackstars@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at comtrackstars, or you can leave us a comment on trek.fm.
We also respond to skywriting and psychic messages.
So until next time, you got
like every time you say like we gotta have something kind of out, I think like no, we don't need an out.
Okay,
how about this, do it again.
So until next time,
we don't need an out.